Hello, and welcome to Inside the Artist. My name is Rachel Corman. Today, I have a couple very special guests. I have Frank Smith and Matt Hartman. They are featured in episode 5 of the new Netflix show, Tidying Up with Marie Kondo. Marie goes to their house and helps them tidy up, and the episode is called From Students to Improvements. Very catchy. I also know Frank and Matt from the entertainment industry. They are both writers. They've worked on several TV shows here in Los Angeles. So we talk about their writing background, and we talk a lot about what it was like being on Marie Kondo's show. And they are very, very sweet, sweet guys. So sit back, relax, and enjoy my interview with Frank and Matt.
And we're back with Inside the Artist with Rachel Corman.
Frank, is this fun for you? Because you're such a big listener of the podcast.
Yeah, long-time listener, first-time guest, so this is pretty great for me.
So you're going to be, like, on the treadmill, like, listening to your own voice?
Wow, later? That sounds narcissistic. You know, getting swole listening to me, but yeah, that is what's going to happen, basically.
He sure will listen to himself.
Like, you won't. You'll be elliptically.
No, not at all. Never.
Matt, is this your first time listening to the podcast?
Yes.
Being on it?
Being on the podcast, listening to the podcast, knowing that podcasts exist.
Knowing that we were going to be on the podcast when Rachel walked through the door.
I'm kidding.
He did give prior consent, fear not.
This was a fun idea. Well, we should say we're doing this for many reasons. We want to talk about you guys as writers and as creatives, but we also want to talk about how you're on the new Netflix show, Tidying Up with Marie Kondo.
We are. We are episode 5, From Students to Improvements.
It rhymes.
Yep.
So catchy.
Yep.
And you had a lovely viewing party with a lot of people.
I know, which was impressive because it was raining. And at first, I didn't think anybody was going to come over because I got a lot of like, I'm sick. And when people call in sick in Los Angeles when it's raining, it's because they don't want to go out in the rain. So here I am thinking nobody's going to come, but people like keep coming in. And the great part was everyone took off their shoes and left them at the door thinking, oh, I can't untidy this place, which I did not tell anybody to do, but I was super in support of.
Interesting. Well, yeah, it does have this ambiance of like, okay, this is tidy and neat and clean. We wanted to keep it that way.
It has good, yeah, CRE now, clean room energy. So, you know.
CRE? Mm-hmm. Did you come up with that?
I did just now.
No.
Hashtag
wow.
CRE. Let that catch on.
Are you going to let Marie know about that?
Probably not, no. We follow her on Instagram. She does not follow us, but she's a busy lady. I guess
she's a busy, busy lady.
She just hit over a million followers.
She just took her first selfie ever, according to her Instagram.
She did because she caught a picture of the poster in New York. I guess she's in New York right now. And the cool thing was before I'm just obsessed with numbers. I'm actually not trying to plug her, but it's really cool that like before the show started, she had I think 653,000 Instagram followers, and then she was gaining about 50,000 a day after the show premiered, and is now over a million, which is pretty cool.
Do you know what her story is? Like, when did she start doing this?
I think the story that is told is that she was always tidy, and from age 5 on, she was going to friends' house and tidying up for them. Like, she just got joy out of making places look nice. That is the story that is being sold.
And you were sold by it.
We were
sold.
Because she actually talked to us a lot about her, you know, personal history. And yeah, she just from a young age knew this was something that brought her great joy. And she was like, how can I bring this joy to other people? Which was pretty cool.
Well, that is her big saying, right? What sparks joy for you?
Exactly. And she has a visual demonstration, as you'll see in our episode and others. It's like a little, how's it go? She like kicks in the air and goes, oh, God, I can't go high enough,
she's
but
like
it was that idea.
Cutest lady.
She's adorable. She's like 4'7" and maybe like 80 pounds soaking wet and just like such a spark plug. She's amazing to be around.
So tell me how you guys got on the show.
It was very random. It was through Frank's Facebook.
Yeah, this casting associate reached out to us and said, hey, you guys look cool. Do you want to do the show? And I was like, we're not, but we'll audition. And we got through like several rounds of auditions, and we made a video for casting and a video for Marie. I made a dumb Star Wars joke. I was like, help us, Marie Kondo, your only hope. But that worked. And it was funny because they didn't exactly say like, oh, congratulations, you're on it. They were like, are you still interested? Are you still interested? And then they're like, okay, we're filming in a week. And I was like, oh, okay, we got to get this place ready. And so we pre-cleaned, which perhaps we weren't supposed to do, but we were just like, we can be untidy, but we shouldn't be dirty.
I have to tell you, I haven't watched the whole season, but I've peeked at other episodes, and yours, out of all the ones that I watched, was the cleanest when she entered. All the other ones, like, it's like a mess in the kitchen and the living room. And I was like, yours is all tidy already. It looks all nice.
We're not fools. We knew camera crews were coming in, so we wanted... We weren't gonna go so extreme as like tidying before she got here, but we also didn't want like it to be actually dirty, so.
No, I think some of the other families, and it's great because they all have like a different story and come from different backgrounds, but I don't think any of them maybe work in TV, and so we had the advantage of like knowing our shame was going to be broadcast. We were like, how do we like do some damage control in advance?
Also, we don't have kids who are constantly destroying everything that we're doing, so.
Well, and your mess is just hidden, which as you showed us.
And that was kind of why we wanted to do it, was we were able to keep, like, you know, exteriors and common spaces clean, but our closets were very filled. And on top of that, we had a place where we had roommates come and go beforehand, so we had accumulated a lot of other people's stuff, which was making it feel kind of like college-y, like harvest whatever you can. I mean, my dad was using peach shaving cream for a year after he cleaned up my sister's dorm, so we just wanted to be out of that mode.
What was your family's response? Because they are featured in the episode.
It was actually great timing because they were planning to visit anyway because they hadn't been in like 5 years and they're visit coincided with the filming, so I was able to like start a conversation with the producers about like, would you want them to like be on camera? I was like, they raised me and they're kind of fun to be around, and they were like, oh my gosh, yes, that sounds awesome, they should like see the reveal, the final result. So that worked out quite beautifully. It was a great trip having them here. We ate a lot of food. We did one escape room, which did not go great because it was a 25% success rate. And
what?
Yeah,
tell me more about this escape room.
What was it again? Was it like some sort of chemical lab or something?
Yeah, you had to escape from, I don't know.
There was Morse code. And then there was an impossible maze that was not lit. It was, oh, and there were Barbie heads. You had to put Barbie heads in the right place, I remember.
How did you find this place?
Yelp.
And this was supposed to be the best escape room that you found?
And then the sad thing was our friends had failed at it before and we'd forgotten.
They had described, oh, this was the most frustrating escape room ever. It's like, what's the best situation? Let's put Frank's parents also in this escape room with us while lights are flashing Morse code at you, like strobe lights.
We did not tidy up that escape room and escape.
No, yeah. Were your parents into it?
They thought it was super fun. They had a great time, and they were like, oh, it was so fun watching you work. And I was like, really? Because I was monstrously stressed and had a neck cramp for a week after. But, you know, I'm glad you had fun.
So let's talk about you guys as artists. You are both writers in your own right.
That is true.
As well. Mm-hmm. So, Frank, when did you first discover writing? And when was it something that you decided you wanted to pursue?
Well, my parents would probably tell you that they could tell around age 3 because I was in class and we were doing creative writing assignments in preschool and I kept basically just rewriting Disney stories. And they were like, that's great that you have a photographic memory. You need to like do new stories, which I hated. So I tried to like do like a... Basically, that was my first foray into fan fiction, actually. I remember one time I was like, had an ending where Beauty and the Beast did not get together. And then the Beast like went into town to find another bride. And I was like, this is stupid. He should be with Belle. So my heart was not in it. But then in high school... I'm saying this to people. I started doing Power Rangers fan fiction. Wait, why am I upset? That's actually on the show. That's not new.
I was actually going to ask you specifically about that.
So I loved Power Rangers for a long time. I actually dragged Matt to Power Morphicon, the Power Rangers convention, this past year. Did you love it, Matt?
It was a thing that happened.
And so it was really fun to me to like write fan fiction in high school. So those were the first inklings that I wanted to do creative writing. And then when I was in college, more and more, I was studying science, but realizing I had this passion for writing. And I remember saying to people, I feel like it's a lot like Sweet Home Alabama because, like, you know, she's like, I love New York, but this fits too. Coincidentally, also realized I was gay when I was quoting that movie. So it just unlocked a lot, Sweet Home Alabama, what can I tell you?
How old were you when you were writing those fan fictions?
16 years old. The YouTube was brand new.
So were you getting some ideas from YouTube?
Oh, well, Should I admit this?
Yes, I mean, you should.
No, it's more that, like, that was before Hulu and stuff, so I was, like, watching episodes on YouTube, which nowadays is not legal and I would not do, but that was, like, my only recourse when I missed episodes back then. So, you know, nowadays I would never cannibalize my own industry, but back in the day, that was sort of my only choice, so.
So you would watch episodes and then come up with your own story of where you wanted to take the characters?
Well, there were two different things I did. In fact, one was there was this season, Power Rangers Lost Galaxy, where this one ranger from the season before was supposed to come back but didn't due to a contract dispute. So I wrote sort of an alternate universe where she was on the show. So that was one thing I did. And then the other one was completely original, my own idea. My own rangers and everything. And they were rainbow colored, if you can believe it. Seven different colors of the rainbow. And again, had no idea that I had feelings for men. Go figure.
Aren't they normally rainbow colored?
But not like specifically all seven, like Roy G. Biv, like red, orange, yellow, blue, indigo, green, violet.
Got it.
God, that brings me back to grade school.
Yep, that's what I'm here for, ladies and gentlemen. Nostalgia.
Wow. And did you end up keeping those when you were going through the tidying up?
Yeah, that was the hard part, was that I had a lot of ideas that I hadn't fully, like, written out in story form, but had, like, the episode ideas and the titles and whatnot and some drawings of, like, costumes and... So I was having a little bit of trouble letting go of that, but most of it, like, had been digitized in some form. Like, I'd also written it out on computer, so it wasn't, like, I know it's rattling around there somewhere if I ever want to go back there, but I'm also onto, like, non-Power Rangers ideas at the moment, so it's probably okay to not have physical remnants.
So you did let go of it.
I did, yeah. I kept some things. There's, like, a
folder. You still have a folder of, like little, like, some things that to just spark your, like, I did that once.
Yeah, there were ones that, like, I definitely knew I wanted to hang on to, but that folder is a lot less thick than it was when you see it on the episode.
Very good. And Matt, when did you first discover writing, and when was it something that you decided you wanted to pursue?
All through childhood, I had written stories and such, but I kind of never really connected, like, oh, this is something I could do as a career, until... Well, high school, I was, like, I really, really was very much inspired by teachers and such to write. And then in college, I got into a film program, which kind of sparked me in the direction of screenwriting. So it was kind of a slow process that was, like, I kind of always knew I wanted to do something creative. And then writing was just, like, always following me as well.
Was entertainment something in both your guys' minds, or was it, did you know what type of writing you wanted to do?
No, I think, like, honestly, it originally was, oh, I'd want to write for Power Rangers, and then...
It was only Power Rangers.
I was like, that's a dream. There was a Power Rangers writer, Jackie Marchand, God love her, who was on a Power Rangers message board, and I wrote her being like, how do I get on Power Rangers? And she was so sweet and lovely and, like, gave me the time of day, which she did not need to do. And that was encouraging. But then as I got older, I realized, like, oh, I don't have to, like, just do that. I can... Mm-hmm. I was sort of in the same mode, weirdly, of, like, when I thought I could only do, like, variants of Disney ideas. And I was like, you can do other stuff too. Don't get me wrong, if I ever, like, were assigned to write a Power Rangers movie, it would be, like, the pinnacle of my career, but for now I'll have to do other stuff.
A little bit of a tangent. Now that I understand your obsession with Power Rangers, did you freak out when you met Kim Crossman, who we worked with on a show?
I absolutely freaked out when I met Kim
Crossman.
She was
in Power Rangers.
You better believe it, at a table read I went up to her and was like, I saw you in Power Rangers, I love you, you're amazing.
How come I did not know this?
She teared up, actually. She was very sweet. She was like, oh my God, I never get recognized from that. And I was like, no, like, no one could act on that show but you. You were so great. She was very
in
good.
In general, no one can act in Power Rangers.
I love
Which
them
one
all.
Was she?
She was the Red Ranger, actually. She was the first female Red Ranger.
Look how excited he gets.
I know.
He talks, like, really fast and he lights up when I ask him.
Because Kim was also awesome to me.
She's super awesome.
Like, we're still friends. She's just, like, a very warm, good person.
Yeah.
I like her a lot.
I had to ask just to tie the two together.
Yeah, I'm really glad you knew that she was on Power Rangers.
I think you might have told me.
It's all coming together.
I circled this whole narrative.
I don't think I knew that until you told me one day. That's so funny.
Well, now you all know, ladies and gentlemen, Kimberly Crossman of Smilf and Power Rangers and many others.
She's so happy to have another person reference her Power Rangers, I'm sure.
She's not like Amy Jo Johnson, who's the original Pink Ranger, who, like, wishes you all would forget
it. I liked the Pink Ranger, but didn't they change the characters all the time.
Yes, that became a thing in season 5, Rangers Turbo, where they changed Rangers partway through because they thought the original Rangers looked too old. And then after that, they started making it like a thing every year for the most part.
Every single panel at the convention, the aforementioned Power Rangers convention, Frank would ask a very specific question. So he knows about every series. He knows every actor's name. He knows what color ranger they were. He knows if it's in space, if it's not in space. They're often in space, and so on. And so forth.
God, it's all, I thought I knew you so well, Frank. This is why I love doing this, and I get to know my friends a little bit more.
In college, I had some friends who used to call me the Mario Savant because they could play any, like, clip of music from a Mario game, and I would instantly know which game it was from. They almost got me one time with the sleeping piranha plant from Super Mario 64, but I got them after a few minutes. Just need to think on it.
So we have to get you a writing job on a new Power Rangers movie. That needs to happen.
I mean, believe me, it is an active interest.
If anyone is listening that can help Frank out with this, definitely reach out to him.
I remember with the first one, like, I knew they'd gone through multiple writers, and I was like, how do I put myself up for this? But they were, like, way too far down the line, but I definitely had the thought.
This is amazing. So, Matt, was entertainment something that interests you, or was it writing books? Because I know you also talk about on the show that To Kill a Mockingbird was a big inspiration for you. Was it, what type of writing did you want to do?
At first, it was short story and, like, eventually novels that was interesting to me, but I'd always been very into movies and television. Like, anyone that was hanging around with me when I was 3, they would, like, they all have the same story of me figuring out the VCR so I could rewind the same scene over and over and over again. And I think one of my top scenes was, like, the Beast transformation scene in Beauty and the Beast. Apparently I'd watch that, like, 20 times in a row. Yes, I am currently gay. So, like, it kind of, like, came to me, like, when I was at college to be like, oh, you can kind of do both if with screenwriting. So that's kind of been my focus recently. I still do write a little bit of fiction that is not for the screen, but yeah, my main focus is screenwriting.
Weirdly, this is a trait Matt and I share. Actually, when I was a kid, my grandmother couldn't figure out the VCR, and so she was like, honey, you have to learn how to do it, because grandma's stupid. So I would literally press the rewind button and go, bewind. And in particular, what I learned how to do was pause it during The House on Pooh Corner for when Eeyore was flipping across the stage, because Eeyore had so little screen time most of the time that these were, like, precious moments I had to savor.
Aw, that's very sweet. Mm-hmm. So you guys do have a lot in common.
We do.
Yeah.
Can we talk about how you guys met? You talk about it on the show.
Well, the show makes it seem like we've received commentary that it seems like we moved in after the first date.
U-hauled is the term the kids use.
That
U-hauling.
Our first date was 62 hours. That's not true.
Oh, it's not.
It's not true. We did move extremely fast. But it wasn't that fast.
It was our third day was 62 hours. Matt's also being deceptive and making it seem like it was much longer.
Because you say on the show you met, you went out, you knew you clicked that night, but then it sounded like you spent that weekend together
until... The edit, it does say it correctly. It says, for those keeping track at home, that was 3 dates. So, like, you do get that. It's just you get that sort of after the description of the date. So some people have erroneously thought that, like, it was the first date that was 62 hours. Now, I will say the third date's not, like, that much later, and it was still a week and a half. But, yeah.
Almost 2 weeks.
Almost. Round up. Yeah, yeah. Kind of.
And when it works out, it works out.
The full story is that we did right swipe on Tinder, as indicated on the show. And Matt was a very good conversationalist, but also doesn't like to dwell, which I appreciated. So he was like, let's go on a date. So we went on a first date, and it went well. Matt was wearing a wrist brace the whole time because he'd gotten pushed down saying Citizen Kane was not a bad movie the week before, right?
Yes, that did happen.
Wait, seriously? Someone pushed you?
Someone did push me because I defended Citizen Kane. and I hurt my wrist.
Oh my gosh.
Not even saying it was a good movie. He just said Citizen Kane's not a bad movie.
Bad movie.
And you got
physically assaulted for that.
Let that be a lesson to all of you. And then on the second date, we went to this place where we had burgers, plan check, and came out of it. And since we both had to drive, obviously, had to have our first kiss in a parking lot, which is a very LA story, I imagine. And then the third date was that 62-hour date where I invited Matt over Friday night. He didn't leave till Monday morning. And after that, we were a fish.
Aww. And how many years later now? Three?
Almost four.
Four on February 7th. Yeah, a week before Valentine's Day. So that time of year is always loaded with lots of expectations and presents.
Yeah, we filmed this episode, the Marie Kondo episode, in spring. So it's been a while.
Yeah, I think we like wrapped filming
spring
in May.
2018.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we've actually been able to keep up the tidy, which is in large thanks due to the whole Con Marie process, because we've established like a clean baseline. So it's like we do 30-minute re-ups from here to there. And before we had people over for the screening party, we did a full 2 hours. But it's mostly like cleaning. The tidying, we've kept up with like folding the clothes and such.
What skills have you learned from her that you've kept up?
Folding is a big one, because we literally do not have the drawer space or closet space to not fold in the way that she does. And it also just makes picking out your outfit so much easier because you can see everything. Mm.
Help with that. Will you guys come over and help me?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. But also, like, once you've touched everything, I keep moving away from the mic. Once you touch everything in your house and put it in that specific place that it's going to live, then I think once a week we'd be like, where is this thing? Where is this thing? I know that we have batteries, but I can't find them. And now I know exactly where the batteries are because they have their specific spot. And if I were to ever pull out the batteries, they'd go back in that specific spot.
Yeah, and I find
very good.
I know. We're definitely like take it out, put it in kind of thing. And I definitely like find that I move much faster in the morning now because I just know where everything is. I'm not fumbling for like my toothbrush and everything. I have everything in its pre-designated spot and just get to getting.
I love it. Now, if you don't mind me going back to your guys' relationship, how have both of you guys as artists, is it the fact that both of you guys are writers also unite the two of you?
Yes.
Such confidence he expresses.
We definitely have very different processes. Mm-hmm. Because Frank is very much a planner and is very organized and I am not. I'm trying to become that, but I am more of a kind of figure it out as you go kind of person.
Yeah, like I'll outline and like write a draft quickly and then rework that a lot. Whereas like Matt will sort of take his time figuring it out, but then once he generates a draft, it's like really far along. So, you know, I think we take about the same amount of time all in all. It's just sort of different peaks of frustration at different times.
We're always frustrated. That's the moral of the story.
Is that just a typical thing for as writers?
Oh, yeah. Writing is hating writing, I think, for most people.
Yeah, it's the 5% of like, wow, this is really going well, and 95% of like, this is miserable. Why am I doing this?
I think it's just like, you know, when you first start writing, maybe for fun, you are in love with the whole, you know, the fact that you're putting your ideas pen to paper and you just really get absorbed in the whole idea of being a writer. But then once you like, you know, move through the process, you realize you do need to be a little hard on yourself sometimes, like take a step back, be like, okay, if this weren't me, if I were just an audience member, how would I feel? And that's like a little less fun to have to, you know, be critical of your baby. But then ultimately when you're done with it, you can feel that much more proud of it because you took the time to be honest and hone it.
And it's all about when you are not writing necessarily for a paycheck that's coming on Friday, it's all about motivating yourself. So I think that we're relatively good at motivating ourselves, but we're also very good at motivating each other. So I think that part of both being writers is helpful.
What is it about writing that sparks your joy? Just to tie it all together.
You go first.
I think I just love being creative, I get joy out of like imagining new things. I always have, just like having like a little movie or show playing in my head. And I love TV and film so much that like to think of like being able to provide that for someone else, I think brings me a lot of joy too. The idea that like, I mean, even being on this show has been great, that like there is a product that, you know, has me in it that friends can appreciate and see. And I have heard from a lot of people I didn't, hadn't heard from in a while, who were able to like not only like have fun watching the show, but also then realize they really needed to tidy their own lives. So it is very motivating to watch this. I encourage people to watch like my episode for sure, but also the other seven, because all the different steps are highlighted and there is something different about each one that like I think creates a whole complete and very, very warm feeling package. That's what I loved about the show, is like, you know, reality TV these days has a connotation of like being heightened and extreme, and this one's just very like zen and, you know, inspiring and uplifting. And it was like that during the process too. The producers were amazing. My castmate Matt was great. So we had a lot of fun.
The other thing I like about it is you guys were fully yourselves. Like, I know both of you personally, and it felt like you guys were being yourselves on screen. It didn't feel like it was produced. It didn't feel like you were made to say something. It just very much sounded like your each individual voices.
No, that's really great to hear. And that was how it was, honestly. Like, they very early on were like, forget the cameras are here. Just act normally, say what you would say normally to each other. And it was like an organic journey, because we knew about Marie Kondo and knew like the tagline of like, if it doesn't spark joy, let it go. But I hadn't read her book and didn't really know about the KonMari method. So I didn't want to spoil myself, honestly. I wanted to kind of let it be a realization on the show. And I'm so much happier, because I think if I'd come in armed with too much knowledge, it wouldn't have been that pleasurable viewing experience.
Yeah, then you just could go in it being yourself.
Yeah, be like, yeah, I heard that. Thanks, let me fold.
Matt, what about writing sparks your joy?
I think like Frank said, it's all about just like flexing that creative muscle and seeing a blank page get filled. So I think that it's kind of like, it's just challenging yourself to come up with a story that you find engaging and that you haven't seen before and that you want to tell, then you have this interesting perspective and you just have to get it out there. So I think it's kind of just fulfilling a creative impulse that I have personally.
And I think that might be why for me, letting go of papers was one of the hardest things, because it was more so than even having a file on a computer. I had like several scripts that I'd printed out that were like physical representations of like an idea that had come to life and become a real thing in the world. So you see me struggle with that on the show, and I can tell you in real life, it was not, it was not easy parting with some of them. But, you know, you realize, yeah, the files are saved. This served its purpose. And it's like, if it doesn't bring you joy presently, it probably shouldn't be consuming space in your home.
And there was a really sweet side of you that I saw on the show, and it really showed your sentimental and emotional side. And there was one moment that really stuck out for me, and it was when you talked about how you didn't want to disappoint your parents, and how you said, one, you didn't go to medical school, and two, you're in a gay relationship. Do you care to elaborate on those and why you were concerned that it wouldn't make them proud of you?
I think it's just the way we're socialized, that like, you know, you were taught that arts aren't a way to, you know, make a living. And, you know, you see couples represented on screen all the time and in media that are just, you know, heterosexual for the most part, heteronormative. And, you know, you can live in the most loving, supportive household, but if that's what you're being bombarded with all day, it's like, you know, I'm at home going to school, what, like 4 hours of the day, and the other 20 are outside in the world. So it's hard to, yeah, it's just hard to see yourself, I think, with as much love and maturity as I do now. You definitely have to grow into that a little bit as a, you know, as an other in this world.
Did your parents ever disagree with your choices?
No, actually, because my sister is an actress, so they kind of early on were like, this one might turn too. And my dad's youngest brother was gay, so like that wasn't a thing for them. They just wanted me to be safe and make sure I was, you know, with people who treated me well and respected me. Unfortunately, I definitely have that in Matt.
Mm. Yes, you do.
Right, Matt?
Yep.
It's very much like the show. Yeah. Frank would say something and then Matt would chime in with his little oners. I love it.
There's a lot of me saying, okay, like 3 seconds after Frank asked the question. It's like, okay.
So sweet. No, I really enjoyed seeing like that oh, you guys are so cute. I really enjoyed seeing that sentimental side of you. And it just felt like you were able to be vulnerable and able to open up.
I think part of what enabled me to be so open was that when we thought about like what we wanted our home to look like, and Marie actually triggered that when she did like her greeting of the house, she was like, take the time to see what you want the house to be like. And it just felt very within reach. So I knew that I had to like access parts of myself and be open in order to complete the journey. It's not just physical. It's not just throwing stuff away. It's like really challenging your heart to like know what is meaningful to me. And then what you're left with is the most meaningful, which is such a beautiful thing.
Can I ask, since you guys have tidied up in here, how has that helped your creativity with writing? Does your mind feel a little bit freer? Do you feel a little bit more creative?
When I am writing at home, I do think that it has, I'm not going to say like it's this mind-blowing, like, wow, I'm suddenly creatively released, but at the same time, I would find excuses to not write. So I would be like, oh, the desk is a mess. I need to organize that. I need to open all this mail. I need to sort this, blah, 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 blah. Whereas now everything is kind of set in its way. And so like when I am sitting down to write, that is what I'm concentrating on, as opposed to this place is a mess or what can I do to kind of mitigate like organizing this.
Yeah, there are definitely fewer distractions. And I think in addition to that, my mom and dad moved into a new home in Massachusetts a few years ago, and my mom would just walk around the house smiling, saying, "Ah, I love this place." And I didn't really get that until we cleaned up our act, and then I was like, oh yeah, I get it. I just can walk through rooms and be like, I like where we live. I'm happy with this home we've created.
Now, if I may transition back into writing.
You may.
You guys have both been assistants on some pretty big shows. Mm-hmm. I should say Frank and I have worked on a couple shows together.
Yes, two wonderful shows together.
Two wonderful shows, Genius and Smilf. Mm-hmm. How has your experience, this question's for both of you, how has your experience assisting on big television shows influenced your writing?
For me, I think it was great being an assistant first because I could sort of see how the sausage was made. Like, in particular on Smilf, I got to be in the writer's room the whole time, so I was hearing the ideas thrown around and sort of seeing how an outline is formed, how jokes and ideas catch on, and then ultimately how the episode's delivered. And I started that job right when the writer's room was starting and then saw it all the way through the end of post-production. So yeah, I think just being that up close and personal gave me new insight on like what you need in a script, sort of practicalities like how many locations and like what will keep an audience visually interested. And in Genius too, that was the first time I was ever on set and I got to go to Prague for that, which was great.
I'm so jealous. Yeah. You got to travel.
That was a phenomenal experience, and the production department in Prague could not have been lovelier. And
it's such a big production too.
Yeah, Behrendorf Studios is where we shot the show, and they do so much entertainment there, and they really have things down. And yeah, I was just watching a lot of people like who were already in a rhythm, because I only came for like the last three episodes of the season to work there. I was really sort of humbled by how much professionalism and experience was making things hum along.
And for me, I've worked on two broadcast comedies. One was multicam and one was single cam. So that was enlightening in just how very different of beasts that they are. They are completely different. One is basically taped theater and one is very much like putting the bits and pieces together to create a finished product. So multicam, 75% of the stuff happens in front of a live audience. It's shot relatively in order. So writing those, you're going to be doing completely different things. So that was very enlightening. And just like Frank was saying, seeing everything move from development and the script to the finished product and everything that takes, and like, oh, putting a dog in this scene for no particular reason is kind of just a pain. Like, do we need a dog?
Because then you need an animal wrangler.
Yeah, exactly.
With the dog. Which costs money, and then you
Yeah. So, yeah, it's kind of all these, like, just thinking things through and making sure that all your choices are for a good reason.
Matt would like a dog in his personal life, just not in his scripts.
Do either of you have interests in show running?
Most definitely. I think that's the, you know, ultimate goal is to be, you know, create a show and be the person who's sort of, you know, the main creative behind it. But it's always a team effort. But, like, I feel like a great showrunner is someone who is, like, spotting great talent, bringing a lot of people together from different backgrounds and sort of making sure the trains are running on time, but has the wherewithal to, like, solicit opinions outside their own. I think it was in Game of Thrones that, like, I shouldn't have started this without remembering the names, but I do have it. No, Tywin Lannister is talking to Tommen when he takes the throne because his brother died, and he's like, you know, a great king, like, solicits outside advice, and I think that's what a great showrunner does. It's not that they necessarily know everything, but they know who to ask, and that's, I think, vital to being a leader in any capacity.
Well, I've seen your experience firsthand that you are well informed on how to be a showrunner, having assisted two big showrunners.
Oh, yeah, and the second one was showrunner, director, and lead actor, so yeah.
Was just a breeze. It was so easy.
Oh yeah, never a challenge came up.
Whenever I would go to set, I would see Frank just running from, like, whether it's from a trailer to set, like, he just was always running.
That was true on Genius too, actually. I would, like, sprint around sets, like, the production people start jokingly calling me the runner, just because, like, I moved with purpose, I guess.
You do, very direct, yes. You do have that, like, serious face too when you're working, so you definitely have, like, a purpose of where you're going.
Although I didn't even watch all of Grey's Anatomy, but there was an episode I caught that I thought had a really good moral that I try to apply to my life too, is, like, run because you're good at what you do, not because you think people expect it of you. So
I like that.
Yeah, and he was talking about him being a physician and not, like, it's basically like you do it because, yeah, you care, not because you have something to prove. So I think that's how I try to do it, is, like, work hard because it means a lot to me, not because I'm worried people will think less of me if I don't.
When did you guys both move to LA?
I'm from LA. I was born in Santa Monica, and I lived here until I was 8 or 9, and then I moved to Orange County, just an hour south of LA, and then I came back for UCLA, and I've been here since college. So I've basically been in LA my whole life.
I moved from Boston about 5.5 years ago now. It was July 2013.
Did you have jobs lined up when you guys moved here? Well, I know, Matt, you said you came from college, but what was the reason for your move here, Frank, coming from the other coast?
Oh, yeah, so I moved here without anything. I had, like, I think $2,000 in my bank account because I spent quite lavishly in Philadelphia. I had a lot of great meals, though. I did not have an apartment, didn't really know anybody. But what happened was earlier that year I'd gotten waitlisted at two medical schools, Duke and Jefferson, and had the chance to think, okay, like, if I don't get in, what am I going to do? And that was sort of when I had the epiphany of, oh, shoot, like, I need to write. This is within me. So I moved out here without even having heard from both of them. And then the week I got there, Jefferson wrote me and was like, we might have a place for you. And I, like, kind of didn't really write them back. I was just like, okay, I'm gonna immerse myself, which may be the craziest thing I've ever done, but so far it's worked out.
So you didn't contemplate it. You knew you didn't want to go to medical school.
It was my first week in California, and I was like, I can't. And it wasn't, I think, like, I've told the story with more certainty in the past, but it, like, did not seem like a guaranteed offer either. So I was like, this is what, like, I need to do right now.
Why did you want to go to medical school in the first place if you knew you wanted to pursue writing?
Because it took me time to get there.
Fair,
you know, you
fair,
don't
fair.
You don't figure stuff out right away. And I think I truly could have been happy being a physician, but the difference is that I tell people now is, like, if I'd been a doctor, I always would have wondered about being a writer. Mm. Being a writer, I don't think about being a doctor at all. So this was clearly
the
best.
Well, then you made the right choice.
I think so. And I don't know that Matt would have wanted to date someone with a stable career and life-saving skills. That doesn't sound like something he'd be into, right?
Mm-mm.
Matt, did you study writing at UCLA?
I was in the film school there. I was on the directing concentration, actually. But that involves screenwriting. That's kind of the most, like, you kind of get a little bit of everything in their directing concentration. As opposed to the other ones are very much concentrated on just the one thing. So directing was you were producing, directing, and screenwriting, as opposed to like the screenwriting concentration, you would be just screenwriting.
And how did you get your first job?
I waited for about 6 to 8 months after graduating, because a film degree is a slow burn. You don't get much off of it. And then I gradually started getting freelance production assistant jobs, and then worked my way through a weird series of things. I worked at the Hallmark had a streaming movie service briefly that I worked at as an acquisitions coordinator. And then...
Ooh, sounds exciting.
I had to censor boobs. I had to, like, that place was ridiculous. And then I had a PA job on Two Broke Girls, and then that transitioned to a PA job on Life in Pieces, and then some jobs in between.
Amazing. Mm-hmm. And Frank, do you care to share what you're working on now?
So I can't give all the details in the world right now, just because stuff is in active development. I have one pilot we have with an independent studio, and we're also working on a film where I think the next stage is to reach out to financiers. So I imagine a year from now I'll have so many interesting things to talk about, but right now everything is almost happening, as I like to say.
But it's great because you were able to transition from being an assistant to writing and selling your own projects.
That was very fortunately timed, yes. That everything wrapped up on Smilf, and I literally went right from one to the other, where I found out that we'd sold our pilot. So my writing partner and I, and so we got to get right to work, which was great. And I have to say, going from having such a busy job to then writing as my job, that was like one of the happiest transitions of my entire life. Like that first, I've been lucky in that I feel like every job I've had has moved me closer to the goalpost, but to feel like, okay, man, like I've worked hard and got something I really wanted, that is a phenomenal feeling, because it doesn't always work out that way for sure.
What are the types of stories you guys like to write?
Right now, it's mostly comedy, but actually at the moment I am writing a historical drama, which is very outside of my wheelhouse. But usually it's kind of like a little bit surreal, quirky comedy that is my wheelhouse.
I would say I like to do comedy drama where like BoJack Horseman is a great example of what I love to do, of like, it's very funny, but it also has moments that really punch you in the gut. I like to have some emotional resonance along with my laughs.
Do you want to make more like animated shows, or?
I have always loved cartoons, so I hope to have a career where I get to do a little bit of everything, like definitely animated, some live action, a Power Rangers feature film,
I want to get you a Power Rangers film now. Let's make that happen.
And like, I will say the pilot we're working on is like an action comedy, so I feel like maybe we have a sample. It's like, it could be like this, but like four times as long,
And with Power Rangers.
And with Power Rangers, but it is supernatural, so like maybe, I don't know.
What if you create something that's like the new Power Rangers?
Yeah,
like
about Power Rangers.
Yeah, like what if you take that passion and create something similar, but it's your own, and then have younger kids be obsessed with that?
Oh my gosh, I could die happy. Don't tempt me. I've had that thought before of like, because Game of Thrones has been such an impactful series on the world, of like, how would I go about that? Like, would I try to get a film made? Would I like write a book first that got adapted? Like, it's, we're in the early stages of that, but I definitely am constantly thinking towards, what's my universe that I build that inspires people? Because giving people the ability to nerd out as I have over countless franchises would be such a gift.
That's really what it is, like a universe to be inspired by.
Because so much of, what we do when we're watching TV is it is escapism. You get to feel all these feelings, see these images that aren't your real life. And so you get a catharsis, but that ultimately, doesn't necessarily affect your daily routine. So I think it is important when you can create truth and authenticity that really resonates with people on a deep level, then, I think you've done something very helpful for them, honestly. And, yeah, the best shows, I think, do inform culture, too. Like, Will and Grace is a great example of a show that, like, I think normalized, like, you know, gay culture in a way where, like, now everyone is quoting RuPaul without even knowing they're doing it sometimes.
What keeps you both motivated?
Nothing.
And also, have there been slow times? Like, talk about some challenges you've had.
Oh, there's been a ton of slow times. I think motivation is difficult for any creative, writers included, obviously. There's that wall of the blank page, and I know that I'm overly precious, so I want to fill that page with something interesting, or I don't want to just, like, write to write, but sometimes you do have to write to write, and that's how you motivate yourself. You just power through it, and there might be something good in that mess. And that's a lesson that I'm learning myself, so I'm not a master at this by any stretch of the imagination.
No, but what I think Matt does that's great is when he's on hiatus or, like, between seasons of a show, he will create a little schedule for himself so that he's, like, doing a little bit of everything. Like, he's reading a book, he's writing, he's spending some time, like, watching TV or film. And I've tried to emulate that when I've had slower periods because, like, my ring partner is an actor, so she'll periodically, like, be working on a show or auditioning or something. And so I try to, like, keep myself busy by, you know, just culturing myself a tad.
Yeah, I find schedules to be very helpful, and breaking for me, I know some writers are very much like, I'm gonna sit at my desk for 8 hours, but for me, I find breaking it up, because taking a walk, going to the gym, reading a book, you don't know what's gonna spark, like, the next thing, and for me, it's definitely never just staring at my computer hoping things are going to come. That's not going to spark anything for me.
You kind of have to get out of your head a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Matt and I have had our best breakthroughs, honestly, on hikes sometimes. I think there's something about moving and being physical that, like,
hiking.
Oh, yeah.
It is. It's really special. It's being out in nature. It's exercise. It's...
Matt got me really into that, and we will run plot ideas at each other back and forth, which really helps. I also remember in middle school, our principal said something that stuck with me. She was giving advice about studying for exams, and she was like, you can only really, like, focus for an hour at a time. So, like, what she advised was take 50 minutes on, 10 minutes off. And that's when I'm at my most productive. I think I'm doing that kind of thing of really plugging for 50 minutes and taking 10 minutes. Just, like, look at your phone or read a book or even just take a walk. Taking walks is huge. And then get back into it. Like, but definitely keep giving yourself the time to step away so that you're not just too into it and losing steam.
Now, my final question is, what is each of your's ultimate goal? Who wants to go first?
I'll go first. I'd say my ultimate goal is to show run eventually. And I want to do it when I'm ready for it. And just... a show, I just create a show that, like, speaks to people and is relevant and fresh and, like, I don't know, just to have something I'm proud of, ultimately. That's kind of, like, something that I'm proud to put out in the world.
Yeah, I think when I see my completely blissful future. It's got Matt in it, of course, but on a professional level, well, we might work together.
You're such
I don't
a
know.
Charmer.
I just say what I feel. But I think I would want to have a production company where, like, I was able to produce and show run my own shows, but also cultivate new talent and especially, you know, have an inclusive platform where, like, you know, I was able to champion voices that we don't see on screen enough. I think we're in a good moment in film and TV where we are seeing new perspectives, but I definitely want to push that more and more forward so that, you know, it's one of the phrases that keeps ringing in my head lately is when people, like, say, I'd never seen someone like me on TV before, and I would love to get to the point where no one has to say that.
I love that. Thank you guys so much for coming on.
Thank you.
And tell everyone where they can watch your show.
It's this little platform.
Up and comer.
Up and coming. It's like very few people know about it.
Undersell it more, why don't you?
It's this portmanteau of net, which is for the internet.
Or
and,
network.
And Flix, which is slang for movies.
Or
so,
films.
So when you put those together, it's called Netflix.
Mm-hmm. With an X, though, not CKS.
Oh, yeah.
Netflix. Yeah, you can check about on Netflix, on Tidying Up with Marie Kondo.
Episode 5, From Students to Improvements. But please watch all of them because, you know, we don't go through all the 5 techniques in ours, and you want to pick that up.
but ours is the only show title that rhymes, so.
So that's something. You gotta check it out.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. A rhyming title should tell you good things are to come.
Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.
And that concludes my interview with Frank and Matt. I really hope you enjoyed our conversation. If you want to check out the show, as they said, you can stream it on Netflix, which I'm sure you can figure out how to find that. Again, they are episode 5 of Tidying Up with Marie Kondo. So you should definitely check them out. Follow them on Instagram. You can find them in the link on our Instagram page at Inside the Artist Radio. Check us out. Give a follow. We're also on Facebook at Inside the Artist. Thanks a lot for listening. Have a good one.